You're listening to Booth Talk from the Aftermovie Diner. And this week's episode is a very special episode. It's about a year in the making, and I finally got to sit down and have a conversation with the martial arts legend, kickboxing world champion several times over, the always engaging and wonderful star of over 30 action motion pictures. It was, of course, the excellent and knowledgeable Don the Dragon Wilson. We get to talk about his latest movie, The Martial Arts Kid, which I do suggest everyone support and check out, as well as some other movies he's got coming out, working with Cynthia Rothrock, and starting off in the business with Roger Corman and the Bloodfist series. We cover all this and more in the next riveting conversation with Don the Dragon Wilson. Enjoy. Thanks ever so much for being on the Aftermovie Diner, Don. It's a real pleasure to talk to you. As I was saying just earlier, we actually spoke at the Urban Action Showcase last year, which was a fantastic event. And in fact, the episode we did last week was speaking to Demetrius, who runs the Urban Action Showcase.
Yeah, great guy. And I really did have fun there. I mean, it was, as you said, a fantastic event.
Yeah, and it was there that you sort of really brought to light information about sort of one of your latest movies, which is The Martial Arts Kid, a big anti-bullying movie, obviously all about the best use of martial arts and a lot of sort of the things that you guys are great proponents of. Why don't you tell us a little bit about putting that film together and shooting that with your good friend Cynthia and your brother James?
I'd like to take a lot of credit for this movie, but unfortunately, I cannot take very much credit. This was a brainstorm of my brother, James, and his good friend, who has also been in the business since, before the early 90s, late 80s, Michael Baumgarten, who wrote the script, directed the film, and then co-produced it with my brother. Cheryl Wheeler, one of the producers, Maurice Imalium, another producer, and Robert Goldman, they actually are the brainstorm behind the Martial Arts Kid. Now, I did my job as an actor, and I kind of gave my two cents a little bit here and there with some story points and things, but really, this movie is 99% the people I just mentioned. It was their brainstorm.
How much did the sort of the anti-bullying message or the peaceful or spiritual message of something like the martial arts, how much did that play into sort of your reasons for getting into it in the first place and or your reasons for continuing martial arts and kickboxing?
Of course, as a martial artist, lifelong martial artist, and when I say lifelong, my adult life, I started at 16. I like the theme because it's what separates us from just being fighters, because certainly there's a potential for danger in just taking people off the street, tough young men, and teaching them how to fight. And actually, when you're a martial artist, you actually learn, really, ultimately, how to kill another person with your hands.
Right.
And if you just just start teaching people, aren't there going to be, eventually, you would hear stories of trained black belt killing somebody, killing them in a bar, killing them, robbing, stealing from them. Hmm. But you've hardly ever, if ever, heard of a case of, say, a group of black belts bullying somebody.
No, never. I've never heard of it.
Right. You got like two or three black belts who know how to fight, and they say they're 16-year-old, 15-year-old kids, and junior black belts, and they get into an altercation at a basketball game, and they beat somebody to pieces. Well, they don't do it because we teach the responsibility with the martial arts. And it's been taught that way for 1,000 years, and there's a reason. Because it's potentially dangerous to take someone who you do not know, let's say you had a class of 40 people, you're going to teach them all how to hurt another person. Well, don't you want some life lessons to go with that, some social responsibility, some respect and honor to go with that teaching?
Yeah, of course.
And what's happening today, and it's probably one of the themes we hope will come through, is there are martial arts schools all over the country now. What they call it MMA. And MMA is mixing the grappling arts the judo, jiu-jitsu, aikido, with the striking arts. And what they're doing is, since they're kind of like doing a new thing, they're thinking that they don't need to keep any of the traditional values. They don't come to the dojo and learn to bow first. They come to the dojo and learn to choke somebody out or knock them out. And I have not seen a wave of guys coming out of these gyms causing violence, but a potential is there. And I think movies like this highlight the fact that while I'm a mixed martial artist myself, I mean, I was a wrestler in college before I was a kickboxer. All martial artists, really, since Bruce Lee anyway, he started popularizing mixing the grappling arts with the striking. But all martial arts nowadays, they mix the arts. We don't just study one and say that's it. But we also keep all the traditional values and the philosophy along with the fighting aspect. And so that's what probably one of the main themes, as well as the anti-bullying theme, of course. You know, it's not right to be a bully, to enforce your will on others just because you're bigger and stronger.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, it's just logical, just morality. Regular society doesn't look up to that. You know, we're not a pack of wolves. I mean, maybe one day the toughest guy did enforce his will on everybody years ago when we were kind of uncivilized. But today, you know, I think people, to be civilized is to give respect and consideration to everybody.
Of course.
And not, even if I'm bigger and stronger and the guy's small, if he's in line in front of me, I'm not going to grab him and put him behind me, right?
Right.
I mean, and that was taught to me as a child. I think how to live in society is a learned behavior. I think if you take a bunch of kids and just let them grow up on their own like a pack of wolves, it'll probably end up being like a dog-eat-dog kind of a situation.
Yeah.
But I think because of civilization and, you know, the people who need to live together, that we've got these social morals and ethics and things that we try to live by today. And it's one of the lessons of the martial art kit, because it's intrinsic in the study of the martial arts. You use it only for the right reason. Yes, it is dangerous. It is, have a certain amount of, there's a certain amount of responsibility that comes with that.
Yeah, of course, of course. And the film was made in Florida. Is it Cocoa Beach in Florida that you shot the film?
The exteriors were shot in Florida, and the interiors were shot in L.A. because the movie does not, not one scene in the movie takes place in Los Angeles.
Right.
It all, when you watch the movie, takes place, well, starts off in, I'm trying to think where the kid came from. I think he came from Cleveland, I think, Ohio. I think he starts off in Ohio, but they go to Cocoa Beach, Florida.
Right.
So as an audience, there's not going to be a single scene that's Los Angeles to the audience.
Sure. And that's where you and James grew up, is that correct?
Correct. So that was a nice homecoming to. Well, first of all, when I left to become a movie star, how many people you think, when I got in my car in 1985 and knew nothing about the film industry, thought that I'd be starring in movies? Not very many of my friends said, "Hey, man, I'm looking forward to seeing you on HBO."
Right.
You know, it was a long shot to move out to LA. I mean, how many thousands of people come out every day to become movie stars?
Sure.
I mean, I don't know what the number is, but I know now how much of a long shot it was, John, because I've been in the business for 30 years. But I didn't know it then. You know, ignorance is bliss in that regard. I'm sure, I don't know the exact number, but I know it was a tremendous long shot.
Yeah, it's got to be thousands.
And then to come back and actually film a movie back in my hometown, after having starred in over 30 films, you know, I mean, I was a star of 30 films. And, you know, not to belittle foreign films, but Jet Li, Jackie Chan, and those guys, they starred in Hong Kong movies.
Right.
I mean, my movies were much bigger budget than theirs, my earlier ones, than their earlier ones. They've only starred in a few Hollywood films compared to me. I mean, as far as Asian martial arts actor, I've probably starred in the most. Maybe. I mean, because all my movies are Hollywood films, American films, 30 of them I starred in.
And in fact, we were talking when I spoke to Demetrius about this, because obviously his thing is diversity and action movies and so on. We were trying to think of, apart from yourself, sort of the last, not Asian, but Asian American performer in action movies.
Oh, of course. I'm the only Asian American one, because the other ones were, you know, right. They all have the thick accent.
Right.
And really, in the Hollywood, Jet Li, Jackie Chan, Chow Yun-fat, these kind of guys, they are the ones, that is the image the studio thinks of when they think of Asian actor.
Right.
Because I have been up for some serious A films, co-starring with people like Sean Connery, I mean, and Wesley Snipes, you know, I don't remember the name of the movie, but it was one that they did together, and I was up for one of the roles.
Rising Sun, I think.
Well, the reason I didn't get it is I would not do that broken accent.
Right.
I told him, I said, I don't do that, and I'm not comfortable speaking in that. First of all, I'd probably embarrass myself.
Yeah.
But I want to make it in Hollywood, but I want to make it as an Asian American, not as a Asian with a real thick Asian accent.
Right.
You know, if they did a movie called Hollywood Shuffle, and it was a comedy, but it was dealing with an important subject. I think they wanted to make a statement, and the only way you could really make it mainstream in Hollywood and get it produced and distributed is to make it as if it was a joke. But it wasn't a joke. The real truth is the only real roles black actors were getting when Hollywood Shuffle came out were the black gangster, the black pimp, the black criminal, right?
Right.
And they made fun of that in Hollywood Shuffle. Then, slowly, movies like Boys in the Hood those kind of movies came out and showed that a black-themed film would attract mainstream America. And they became successful, and then all of a sudden, the Denzel Washingtons, the Will Smiths, the Wesley Snipes, the Danny Glover, leading men, our black actors became leading men in Hollywood, and this all started when I moved out here in 1985.
Yeah.
But it's that big kind of revolution in entertainment has not happened yet for the Asian actors. Well, also, if you get any amount of familiarity with Asians, you can obviously see I'm a mix.
Right.
I'm mixed. I'm more Hawaiian looking or maybe Filipino than I am full-blooded Japanese. I mean,
right.
I'm not. They can recognize. I'm what they call an Ainiko, a half-breed, mixed. They can recognize it immediately, but most Americans just think, you know, I'm maybe Chinese, I'm Korean, I'm Japanese. They don't really see it, but in the Asian world, it's obvious to them.
Right, of course.
But you know, I played American Indian, if you can believe that.
Yeah, in what movie?
I did a movie called Terminal Rush with Roddy Piper, and we shot it in Toronto, and they portrayed me as an American Indian.
Oh yeah.
But you know, Jason Scott Lee played, I think, Geronimo, didn't he? And I know that Lou Diamond Phillips, who is Filipino, has played Mexican. He played La Bamba.
Oh, yeah, no, I remember him in La Bamba. Yeah, funnily enough, we've also covered that
on
the movie.
Well, he's Filipino, though. You know, he's
no,
not
of
Mexican.
Course.
You know, but I do know this. Movies are, making them is a business. It is not a charity, and they're corporations. You know, corporations are very cutthroat.
Oh, yeah,
the very
of
nature
course.
Of them is to make a profit so that the shareholders can get dividends, right? They want to make a profit. They invest in it. These are public companies, Warner Brothers, Universal, Sony. They're all in business not to improve society so much. It's not like they're the bylaws of the company. The corporation is to make a profit.
Right.
Now, if you can do both, which is, to me, the ultimate a film can do. Most films are what I would call a roller coaster ride.
Right.
No matter how exciting that ride is, you start in one place, you come back to the exact same place. Aren't you on a roller coaster ride at a carnival or fair? Or,
yeah, of course. Yeah.
I mean, but a good one, you'll go up and down and turn and go upside down. You'll do all kinds of crazy things. And then when it's all over, you're at the same place. Well, a movie, though, can, in some instances, the ultimate that a movie can do is affect you as a human being. It can open your eyes to a human condition or situation or a point of history even that you did not know before you watched that movie, and that you might yourself may be slightly transformed after having spent that 90 minutes in that theater. Now, that doesn't happen often, and it's certainly not the goal of the corporations, the big studios. But sometimes in independent films, I think you can juggle the elements of filmmaking such that a profit is made, but also a journey is taken by the actual viewer. They don't end up necessarily in the exact same place. They have been transformed to some degree from the experience of the film. And that you know, my films aren't that way. Of course, you know, that's not the goal of my films. My films are escapist, genre, just fun films. But I do know that the my second career, or the business I'm in now, the entertainment business, can do more than just give you a roller coaster ride. I mean, you know, I myself have been affected by films before, and so I know I'm not the only one. I know other people the same thing. You can be educated, you can be emotionally affected, and you can your eyes can be slightly open to other human conditions you'd never even be exposed to without the, you know, magic of movies.
And that's one of the things, just to bring it back to movies again, that's one of the things the Martial Arts Kid is trying to do in its makeup, along with being entertaining and along with being a redemptive story, because obviously I think the kid starts out as a bit of a tearaway at the beginning.
You know, he does, and he goes through a transformation, and it is takes 90 minutes, but by the end of it, he's a different person, and I think the audience can see that.
Yeah, and you worked, this is one of many films you've done in recent years with Cynthia Rothrock. Now, during your, because obviously you were both making a lot of movies in the 80s and 90s, at sort of what I like to call the golden age of action. 80s and 90s tends to be sort of that golden age.
Well, I do five in 13-month period, John. I starred in five films.
Yeah, no, of course.
So it was called the video days, though, and I was just doing what they called feeding the video monster.
Yeah, but you didn't, I don't think, did you do any with Cynthia back then during those prime years?
No, I didn't know Cynthia at the beginning of my career because basically she was doing films in Hong Kong.
Right.
And while she was a martial artist, you know, I was a kickboxer, and kickboxing is not traditional, it's not the tournament circuit. She was doing forms competition in tournaments.
Yeah.
So the fighting I did was not point fighting, it was full, what they call full contact or kickboxing. So even though we were martial artists and really heavily, deeply involved in martial arts, we never saw each other. We never ran into each other until the 80s,
right.
Mid-80s.
And was the first movie you did together, was that Redemption in 2002, or am I wrong about that?
Yes, it was. And I had her in mind for the film, and I asked her at Alan Goldberg's event. Let me think. I'm trying to think of what year it was. But anyway, it was at the Action Martial Arts Honors, I think they call it, Hall of Fame in
right.
Atlantic City, the Tropicana. And I asked her, I said, Cynthia, would you do a movie with me? I mean, you'd only have to work X amount of days because her character gets killed in Redemption.
Right.
It was bought by Showtime, by the way, and did really well. And
I have it on DVD.
Oh, great. Well, you know what? The writer, unfortunately, passed away. He had a brain tumor.
Right.
But he wrote two of my scripts, and to me, they're two of the most unusual. When do you see a action star have money trouble, and his house is going to get repossessed, and his ex-wife is leaving with the kid? In other words, this guy had personal problems as well as the problems with his job and the problems with the bad guy. And I don't know. I really liked that script, man. It was very unusual. And this guy, the writer Jack Peach, he wrote also Whatever It Takes, which was a It was a movie about steroids. Name another movie that is about steroids. It was the only one that I have ever read. And at the time, 1 in 10 high school athletes was taking steroids,
yeah,
according to the statistics. So it's a very abused drug, and you never hear about DEA busting people for steroids. It's all about cocaine and crack and heroin and speed. But those are two unusual films that the writer wrote. And anyway, he wrote this one, and I thought Cynthia would be perfect as the female SWAT unit girl. And that was the first one we did. We have the same agent, by the way, so that's one of the reasons why we are working together is,
nice.
You know, the same agent is deals with the producers.
And one of the things I was going to point out, because, I mean, if anyone checks out your IMDb profile, they can see, obviously, the fantastic work you did through the 80s and 90s. And I will want to talk just a little bit about your Blood Fist series with Roger Corman a bit later on.
Oh,
but,
okay.
But
sure.
They'll see that, obviously, certainly in the last couple of years, your movie output increase again, which is fantastic. I mean, we as action fans, that's what we're looking for. But I wanted to ask, you worked obviously back in the day when there were companies like PM Entertainment and Corman's company and other companies, Canon and things, belting out action movies, you know, like you say, 5, 10, 15 a year with stars ranging from yourself and Cynthia and people like that to other martial artists and to other actors like Sly Stallone and people. So what is the difference now? Obviously, there's a big streaming market. There's still a video market. What is the big difference between working for those companies back then in the 80s and 90s that were producing these action movies, and then the fact that now, like you say, you're doing five or six movies a year now. You've got lots coming out in the next couple of years.
I could do 20 movies a year.
Yeah.
Because what's happened, remember now, I'm coming from sports, and I came into the acting thing in 85, started my first movie in 88. But so I was there when all this first started, when the whole video craze, and right after Bloodsport, remember that was the movie that ignited all the martial art movies.
Right.
Van Damme, basically. Here's what is going on. There are more movies being made today than ever in the history of film business because it's gotten cheaper to make movies.
Right.
Cheaper. I mean, you can go buy a DVD camera for less than $1,000. It's good enough. You can put it on Showtime when you shoot it. That's amazing, isn't it?
Oh, yeah.
You can buy the editing equipment. It's just a program goes into your computer. You can edit it on your laptop. You can do the special effects, the sound effects. So while movies are being made, more of them are being made, John, they are not of the quality of the former movies. The lighting is not as good. The camera work is not, the writing is not as good, the acting is not as good, sometimes having more of something does not mean there's going to be more quality. What I've seen is a kind of lowering of the quality, and so when I was presented with scripts that were horrible, horrendous scripts, I could have just done it, because if you just go for the money, and I don't want to list any actors, but there are some actors who they say they take no responsibility for the quality of the movie, because they say, look, I'm not the director, I'm not the producer, I'm not putting the sound in, I didn't write the script, I'm being hired, they're paying me good money to appear in this movie, and I'll do my character to the best of my ability. And so many actors did that during the last 20 years. I'm not one of them. I always wanted to co-produce them, which means I wanted to be involved in the casting. I wanted to be involved in the script. I wanted to be involved in the editing. And, you know, the trouble is, you eliminate, my agent showed me, I had said no to more movies than I'd said yes to, which means, you know, you got to change those numbers. You got to start doing movies if you were to stay in the business.
Right.
But the quality went down so low, it just, you know, and I'm in a catch-22. I mean, when I read a bad script, I could tell it's bad. You know, if it doesn't make sense and it's not working for me in the script, it's not going to magically, during the course of the shooting, turn into Gone with the Wind.
Right.
It doesn't happen. They can be improved by a good director, and they can be lessened by a less than good director. But they don't become different movies. I mean, if it starts off bad, it's going to end up somewhere between bad and not as bad as you thought.
Right.
So I've just said no. Now, the movies you've seen me in, if you look at my IMDb and you check it, you'll see I used to do one or two movies a year, and I was the star, and that's it.
Right.
I didn't appear in anybody else's movie. And believe me, the money is in doing that kind of thing, because they pay for your name, and you only have to work a week, 2 weeks. I mean, I can make more money today to do one scene in a movie than I used to my entire films.
Right.
Yeah, and so
that's crazy.
Yeah, well, you know, I mean, the dollar's worth less, but it's because
it's good for you. It's crazy. That's the business, but it's good for you. I mean,
it is good. But look, I flew by Universal flew me to Romania to do one scene in The Scorpion King. Now that's a low budget movie for them. It's a director DVD,
right?
But they spent $9 million. Now $9 million to Universal is not even worth blinking over, right? To me, that's a big budget movie.
Yeah, you can make two movies for that.
You know what? It's a friend of mine directing it. I'm not going to say no. I mean, it's just one scene. I'll just go. Of course, what happened is the very first take, John, I get stabbed right in my calf. It goes all the way through my calf muscle into my bone.
Wow. Ouch.
I had to go to the hospital and sew it up. And Yeah, so I although I was supposed to be in the opening action scene, I'm barely in it. It's Scorpion King 4. It's the most recent one. We shot it last year in Romania. But anyway, I am taking these gigs where I just come in, I do my role. And it's not like I'm not doing it as good as I can. I mean, I'm performing to the best of my ability as an actor, but I'm not writing the script. I did not hire the director. I'm not going to be in the editing room.
Right.
So I'm doing, some actors used to call it take the money and run, but I'm not doing it with that in my back of my mind. I'm doing it because I'm trying to do what the other actors do. They don't take responsibility of the entire film.
Well, also, it's the nature of the business and the nature of the industry right now, isn't it? That those sort of, you know, an individual martial artist running a movie is no longer the way. I mean, even Stallone said when he was putting together the first Expendables, he was like, not one of us can open a movie the way we used to be able to open a movie. If we put all of us in a movie, maybe we can do it. But if put one of us in a movie,
right,
it's not opening the same way. You know, and that's Sylvester Stallone. He tried other genres and he tried other stuff.
Excuse me. If you're an action fan, you can't miss The Expendables, right?
Oh, no, of course not. It's amazing.
You got to at least watch it. I mean, whether you like it or not, because, you know, they've got everybody in it. I mean, I watched one just because Chuck Norris was in it.
Right, the second one, yeah.
You know, the other one was Wesley Snipes, because, you know, I've known Wesley for years and everything, and he just got out of jail and everything. I just wanted to, I don't know, you know, you got to be a fan of one of these guys. Like, they got every single one. They got Van Damme, they got Jet Li, Dolph Lundgren, I mean, Stallone, Bruce Willis, Schwarzenegger, Harrison Ford. I mean, can I even think of a name that they don't have? I don't think so.
I mean, I can think of a bunch of, like, they haven't put Cynthia in one of them yet. They haven't put you in one of them yet.
I just mean, you know.
There's a whole bunch of people
do,
I want to see in them. But
if they keep doing them, eventually they're going to have to get us, right?
Right, of course. Well, no, one of the questions I was going to ask, I mean, I only brought the Expendables up just as an example. But one of the questions I had that I did want to talk to you about was that, you know, since that movie first came out and was a huge hit, normally what happens is, with any of those big hits, is that there's immediately sort of 5 to 10 straight-to-video versions of them. And we as action fans, you know, we once we knew there was a potential to put all these people in a movie, we knew of people like yourself and Cynthia and, you know, Gary Daniels or Jeff Speakman or whoever it is.
Everybody's trying to do one, as
right,
we speak.
Yeah, and put one together. And it's, you know, we sit here, whatever it is now, it's got to be almost 10 years since the first one, or maybe 7 or 8 years since the first one came out. You kind of wonder. But what's been nice, what I was going to say, is that I see now with movies that you're doing, like Showdown in Manila and things like that, rather than having, oh, it's the B Expendables or whatever you want to call it, some rubbish name, you're actually putting together movies where you, Matthias Hughes, and Mark Dacascos and people like that are now all in movies together. You and Cynthia.
Casper Van Dien.
Yeah, Casper Van Dien. You and Cynthia are obviously doing a bunch of
Jerry
movies together.
Kagawa,
so talk about a few of those.
Different names. Olivia Gruner.
Yeah, Olivia Gruner is amazing. Yeah, he's still making his own movies and producing his own movies.
Oh, he's, you know what? He's a talented guy. And I mean that in just in general. I mean, he can fly helicopters. He's a professional bodyguard at the highest level. I mean, he protects people overseas and, you know, I'm saying, you know, like Blackwater type bodyguard. He's a former competitor, great martial artist. He's an actor, producer, director, writer. He does it all.
Yeah.
Olivier, I can't say enough good things about Olivier Gruner. I mean, I am impressed with him. I didn't know him for many years. I knew he was a martial arts actor, but it wasn't until we did a movie called Soft Target together.
Right.
Which actually Lionsgate bought the North American rights, and they released it as Crooked because they didn't believe it was about the girl being a target. They believed it was about crooked cops.
Right. And
so
Lionsgate been releasing a lot of these action titles. They've really been supporting it, it seems.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, they do. You know, they have, of course, it's direct to DVD, though. They don't put them in the theaters because they're not those kind of films. They're not competitive in theatrical. But, Lionsgate has done a great job.
Yeah. Even Jason Statham's Lionsgate movies are going straight to video. So, you know, it's all action movies, you know, not
look,
just...
Look, there's no shame in that, because let me tell you what that... There's a catch-22. Movies that do not have the right star have to be released in the theaters, otherwise nobody ever hears about them and nobody would rent the DVDs.
Right.
Some actors, like what would happen to me in the 80s, I was so popular on video, they didn't have to release them in the theaters. As soon as people walk by the video store and they see a brand new Don Wilson movie, they just rent it.
Yeah.
And
we
they didn't
actually
have to
like
hear
that.
One word about it. They didn't have to see one advertisement or anything. They rented it. And Jason Statham's the same way. If you see one of his action films out, you just rent it. If you're a fan of his anyway, I mean. So he doesn't have to go theatrical. It's not, it's kind of a catch-22 because you'd like for all your movies to go theatrical because it always has a bigger prestige connotation that I've got a movie going theatrical. But the reality is most movies, even the studio ones, they're big ones, they lose money in the theaters.
Hmm.
And but they have to release it in the theaters, otherwise nobody would buy the DVD.
Right, of course. And I didn't mean it as a sort of a negative comment. Love
Jason
the fact.
Jason is still a strong actor. I mean, he's,
I love the fact that there are movies with you and Matthias and Olivia Gruner and Mark Dacascos and Jason Statham and all these people. I love that there are movies, two or three of them a year that come out and we can stream them or we can rent them or we can buy them.
I need
a million more just like you.
I need 1 million fans just like you.
Seriously, we love it. I do an action-centric show. I cover a lot of action on the After Movie Diner. I've interviewed as many action stars as I possibly can get my hands on. I mean, it's one of my favorite genres. And, I have all those movies I have all the Blood Fist. I was the guy who put up that photo that you shared of all the Blood Fist movies that I have on DVD. And,
oh, well, thank you. Thank you, because I did a few of them. I did eight of them.
Eight of them. I have all eight. I tracked them all down on DVD from various different places.
Some people say, well, Don, you're doing all this violence. I said, listen, I didn't make the world violent. The world's violent. It's been violent since the first caveman hit another caveman over the head with a club.
Sure.
I said, but what we do is, what all action films, the redeeming social value is, good triumphs over evil.
Right. Well, they're escapism.
At the end, the good guys win. So if you're a kid and you love action, you're not loving the bad guy and you're not thinking, man, I'd like to rob banks and make money and drive a brand new Corvette like that. You're looking at Bruce Willis and Stallone and Schwarzenegger and you're saying, no, they're kicking the bad guy's butt.
Right.
And so that's the redeeming social value.
Yeah, I look at them as a catharsis. I look at them when people say, if you watch action movies, you're going to go out and be violent. They're so wrong. What it is when people watch action movies, all those kind of violent impulses or aggressive impulses or negative impulses that people might have just going through their day-to-day dealing with traffic or people or, the news or whatever it is, you watch an action movie and you see something that doesn't happen in real life. You see good triumphing over evil, you know what I mean? You see
right,
that one man against... the world.
Get the bad guys and Die Hard. You feel like you did something good.
Right.
It's just like when you watch a Super Bowl and your team is playing. If they win the Super Bowl, it's nothing you did, right?
Right.
But you feel like a winner.
Yeah,
because
it's
your team won. So I think that's what happens. If you can identify with the lead actor in a movie, like in the first 15 minutes, if you kind of identify Bruce Willis, if you remember Die Hard, he was having trouble with his wife.
Sure.
Do you remember that? And so they made him sympathetic. So you kind of like, that's a rough thing. Your wife goes, gets a job, and blah, blah, blah. And so you identify with him. And then when he wins in the end, it's a happy ending. Then you feel like you're happy.
Yeah, it's the same. It's the same adrenaline release that you get watching sport.
You get a release,
or,
correct.
Yeah.
I think more it's the way – I think it's more the way you're saying than it is if you watch Die Hard, then you feel like going out and blowing up a building.
No. I don't know, and it's like people who, we get the same argument, I'm also a horror fan, you get the same argument with horror movies, that because people watch bloodthirsty movies, they're going to go out and be bloodthirsty. I think if you're insane and you're going to go out and be violent, you're going to go out and be violent.
Yeah, if you have mental illness,
right.
Then anything can set you off.
Right. No, of course. And I don't mean to say that isn't the case, but I mean that a regular schmo like myself watching an action movie is not going to be turned into a psychopath or whatever.
You know what? If it does happen, I have created probably my share of psychopaths. I've done a lot of action movies over the last 30 years.
Yeah. A couple more things. So talk to us about getting into Blood Fist originally and working with Roger Corman and how that came about.
I came home one day. I was living in Beverly Hills at the time, but we called it the ghettos of Beverly Hills because it was the apartments. But it was I lived in an apartment in Beverly Hills, and I hit my answering machine that said, if you're the Don Wilson, that's the kickboxing champion, my name's Roger Corman, I'd like for you to come in and read for a movie. And so I'd never heard of Roger Corman. I didn't know who he was. And it's a good thing that I didn't, John, because had I known that meeting him could change my life, I would have been just too nervous to give a good performance, right, in an audition. Because he's not like a guy who's once in a while made a movie. This is a guy who's made 1,000 movies, and he's made everyone's career, from Jack Nicholson to De Niro to,
yeah.
I mean, just a multitude of people have come through the Corman ranks. And so I didn't know any of that, thank goodness, because I was not nervous when I went into Reed. So I went into Reed for the lead of his movie. And actually, when I came in, the casting director apologized for asking me to come, because he said, it's a Caucasian lead, and the brother's already been cast, and he's a Caucasian, and he said, maybe I could be the bad guy. So I read for him, but I still read the sides that I had studied, which was for the lead. And he said, I'll be right back. And he leaves the casting office, and he says, Roger Corman wants to meet you. So I come out of the casting office, I sit down at Roger's big office in Brentwood on a couch, and now this is a guy... I now know him as an icon, but at the time he's just an older-looking guy who's, he's in great shape. He's thin and he's tall. And he says, Don, tell me about yourself. So I told him my story about being a kickboxing champion, about meeting Chuck Norris at my fights, and Chuck telling me to try to be an actor when I'm done fighting. And I moved to L.A. to be an actor. And he said, would you read for me, please? So I start doing the audition. I believe I got about a third of the way through, which is only a few lines by me, right? It's about a third of the way through the audition, and he stops me, interrupts me. He says, that's enough. I've seen enough. And usually, because I've been in the business now 30 years, when they stop you in the middle of your audition, they want you to get out the door as soon as possible.
Right.
And don't let the door hit you on the rear end when you leave, is what they're thinking.
Right, well, exactly.
When they stop you in the middle of the audition. He looked at me and said, Don, you're going to be the star of this film. He said, you're going to go on to do many martial art films. He said, then you're going to go to action films. And he said, much, much later in your life, you're going to be a famous international dramatic actor. He goes, here's a script, you leave in 2 weeks. That's my first time meeting Roger Corman. That's what he told me. And that's exactly what's been happening in my life. You know, everything he said. He put me on a weekly salary. At the time, it was $4,000 a week. And in 85, $4,000 a week was, I felt like I was a rich guy.
Yeah.
I'd take it right now, tell you the truth. But anyway, he put me on a salary because he didn't want his star to be broke, I guess. And he signed me to multiple films, but not exclusive. He would let me do other films, but he said he wanted to be able to advise me on whether I should take them or not. He didn't say by contract he would refuse to let me. Because like you said, I'd worked for PM and many other companies. But I only did it when I got Roger's approval, though, by the way.
Right.
Roger checked them out first, because here's what would happen. If I went and did a very bad quality movie, it would affect his next movie with me, right?
Of course.
So he had an ulterior motive. But that ulterior motive was right in line with my motive of trying to have a career out here. He wanted me to make the right decisions. And so he asked that I would bring over the scripts and bring over the deals before I signed. And I said, yeah, that's no problem. And I did. I did that with my career. And, I end up doing 12 movies with Roger. And David Carradine thought he had done more than anybody, because one time he said, you know, Don, I did more movies than anybody. I said, how many did you do? And he said, 8. So I informed David that I did 12.
What are the
Roger still offers me movies, by the way. He offered me Blood Fist 9.
Really?
But the script was too bad for me to do. I had to pass. And this is the godfather. I wanted to do the movie.
Yeah.
It was back in the Philippines. And another actor did it, though, a guy named Matt Mullins.
Right.
And Matt and I ended up working together on White Tiger.
Oh, okay, yeah. We want to talk about that in a minute, yeah.
Yeah, but Blood Fist 9 was the one Blood Fist I did not do.
Right, but you did, and then you did several with PM Entertainment. In fact, we did an episode.
I did 6 movies with them. Yeah,
we did an episode about Out for Blood, where I got to speak to Richard Munchkin and Shari Shattuck, obviously the leading actress in that.
Shari Shattuck. Well, if I was a single man, and she was a single woman at the time, she was. You know what? All the female leads. I mean, they throw us together. They get a guy who's going to be the action star of the movie, and they give you a beautiful, attractive woman to work with for, the whole shoot. Of course, any normal person would be attracted to them, but, I at the time had a girlfriend. I think she might have been married at the time, actually. But, I don't cross the line, but I just mean it is a natural thing, the
right.
quote, Angelina Jolie Brad Pitt syndrome.
Oh, yeah, no, I mean, it's...
They're not the only ones that worked together that started dating afterwards.
Right, it's understandable.
Yeah.
The other thing that people might know about you if they've done any research is obviously you're in the movie Say Anything, sparring with John Cusack, who mentioned you recently, I believe, in an interview he was giving about his latest movie that's coming out, which is Blade, is it?
And, yep, he did one with Jackie Chan. I haven't seen it yet. I don't even know if it's...
It's coming out this week. It's coming out this week.
I'm definitely going to see it because he told me about it a while back because I told him, I said, you know, you're the best kept secret in Hollywood. He goes, what are you talking about? Because I still talk to John, by the way.
Yeah.
And this was maybe a few months ago I talked to him, and he said, oh, I got one coming up with Jackie Chan. I said, oh, really? Oh, great. You know, I'm glad you're showing your martial arts skills because I started him in martial arts when he was training for Say Anything.
Yeah.
Because the character was supposed to be a martial artist.
Yeah.
And I end up doing a scene in the movie with him where I break his nose. He looks at his girlfriend and I throw a kick and it breaks his nose.
Yeah.
And I mean, in the movie.
And in the, he did a little bit in Gross Point Blank because he fights Benny the Jet in Gross Point Blank.
Yeah, right. Benny became his personal trainer.
Right. But he hasn't done, although he's played hitman and he's done action roles, he's never brought that to the fore, that martial artist.
He has not shown off what he can do, believe me. You know, and Keanu Reeves did a great job, by the way, of The Matrix, but that role was tailor-made for John Cusack.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, you'd have seen phenomenal fight action out of John, and well, look, I'm not going to compare actors anymore because Keanu Reeves did a great job. I mean, there's no doubt about it. He was great in Matrix, but I don't know. I would have loved to have seen John Cusack in that role.
Yeah, it'd be interesting.
I don't want to say one is better than another when it comes to acting, but one thing is true. One would give a different performance than another. They do it a different way. And
definitely.
Once you've seen somebody like Keanu, who owns that character, by the way, that Neo character, he was great. There's no complaints for anything he did. It's hard to see somebody else in that role. You know, like I can't think of anybody. I mean, yeah, I would love to see John get it if Cusack had. Oh, by the way, that role was turned down by Will Smith. You know, it was written for Will Smith was offered the lead.
Right.
A Matrix. He turned it down. That's who the studio saw as Neo.
Yeah.
Was Will Smith.
Well, I mean, once he becomes sort of Superman, as he does at the end of that movie or halfway through that movie, it's more about an actor who can handle that physicality than it is necessarily the emotions in it. But did you see what Keanu did in John Wick? I mean, that is some phenomenal work there in that movie.
Yeah.
Did you see that?
Yep, absolutely. Right. It's amazing how these certain actors who you don't see as action stars can make that transition.
Well, he trains very hard. I think he's kept up the martial arts since The Matrix. I think he's actually kept up the discipline, I think.
I think, didn't he become a Buddhist also? Or is he a Buddhist? I think he's got Asian blood in him, as a matter of fact. I think Keanu Reeves might have, doesn't he have some kind of ethnic...
I'm not sure. I don't know.
I'm not 100% sure. But you know what? We should look that up. We should Google it because I think he might.
I liked seeing the fact that obviously something like The Raid has pioneered this idea of having the balletic camera moving in and out of the action and doing everything sort of in one take so that it seemingly is realistic. And it was nice to see John Wick be able to utilize that technique with the camera, but also obviously Keanu's prowess.
Matt Damon in Born Identity.
Right,
they'll pull the camera back and they won't stunt double them, and they'll do it one or two takes, and he looks pretty tough too. I mean, both of them did a great job. You're right, the camera work was a little different and allowed them to show that it's actually them doing it.
Well, I'd be very interested. I mean, I'm sure you'll go see it, but I'd be very interested to find out what you think of Dragon Blade when you see it. You should let me know on Facebook.
Absolutely.
So, also, you know, very, very sad recently, the passing of Roddy Piper. Very sad.
I had just done an interview for his radio show that he does for the WWE.
I heard at the podcast that he did. It's fantastic.
Yeah, he did a podcast, and we kind of re-hooked up, and also we had lunch together because he was going to be in the movie Enter the Fist with me.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
Yeah,
okay.
He was one of the characters in Enter the Fist. So he and I and Sean Stone all had lunch over in Brentwood talking about the movie.
Yeah.
And unfortunately, I've lost several close friends. My closest friend, Chris Penn.
Yeah.
Sean's younger brother was my best friend.
Yes.
From heart attacks. And they, you know, it's still a big killer. I mean, they look and appear completely healthy, and then the next day, I'm told they died the night before.
Yeah, that's crazy.
So it is a scary thing for any of us. We, you know, everybody needs to keep, of course, Roddy was not overweight, but he possibly took steroids at when he was younger. And when you take steroids, it affects your heart.
Right.
And Stallone's had a little heart trouble. Van Damme's had some. Schwarzenegger. I think you got to if you've ever played around with steroids, you're susceptible, and you really need to be on top of your heart.
Right.
You know. But I think that's what. I could be wrong. He could have been born with some kind of congenital thing. But I'm telling you, he wasn't not a big old fat obese guy.
No.
He was still in shape when I saw him. Looked healthy, energetic. Did not look like a guy whose heart was going to stop.
And I'm still catching up on the movie, so I haven't sadly seen the movie you guys did together, but I'm still
Terminal Rush
is
called, and it was that's the one where I played the Indian.
Right, so I need to see that at some point, definitely. I'm still catching up.
It's not Gone with the Wind, but Roddy plays a real character, and then it's a fun movie. It's like I said, it's one of those roller coaster ride movies.
Well, I'm still watching the movies he did with Billy Blanks and stuff, so I'm still catching up on
those.
Oh, those
are the old ones, man. Right. Well, they're called classics now.
Yeah. No, they definitely are. So, let's just finish up then, talk about White Tiger and Shodan in Manila, what we can expect and when we can expect them, and also just anything else you think we should know to promote the martial arts kid.
Oh, thank you. Well, White Tiger was shot in 2012 in Bangkok. The problem with that movie, the reason why you haven't seen it yet, is because the local Thai producer and the American producer have been in lawsuits for years. It takes years to settle these things.
Yeah.
And it finally is settled. The film has been in post-production, and a film company called Gorilla Pictures will be selling it.
Nice.
So it's finally coming out, the release of it. But it was due to lawsuits. So this, I'm not the star of it. It's a buddy picture, unless you can say, let's say, Tommy Lee Jones is the star of Men in Black. I mean, it's I'm the Tommy. This came from my brother, by the way. He said he looks at me as the Tommy Lee Jones character in this movie.
Okay.
I'm kind of the cranky old Thai military officer who's helping this young American FBI agent, and that's played by Matt Mullins.
Okay.
And one of the historic people in the movie is Joe Louis, who sadly died just a few months after the film of cancer. And it was the last thing Joe did, and he did a phenomenal job. He opens the movie up, Joe Louis. He's a famous martial artist, heavyweight champion in martial arts. And so that's one thing the fans can be looking forward to, is to see Joe Louis in the last thing that he did before he passed away. And Cynthia's the... I'm not going to be a spoiler alert kind of. Cynthia's the bad girl in the movie, I guess you'd call it.
Yeah.
I end up having my big final fight is with Cynthia Rothrock.
Oh, excellent. Can't
so it's
wait
kind
to
of
see
different
that.
For us. Yeah. And we were in a location which we appropriately named it the Bat Cave. And the reason is not because it looked like something Batman would go in, is because there were thousands of bats in the cave.
Yeah.
Now, you know what bats do when they hang upside down? Well, the ground is covered with that.
Yeah, produced crap.
And every
crap.
Time I threw a kick at Cynthia, it would go into her face.
Mm.
Every time she threw a kick at me. It
no.
It was. It's not all fun and glamour making movies.
No, it's those little things that people just don't think of when they see a location. They go, oh, that's a cool location. And then,
John, when you see this movie, you'll be thinking, oh, man, Don and Cynthia were eating bat poop during this scene.
Oh, no. Well,
it was all in her face.
I can't wait. And then Shodan in Manila, I have to
Shodan in Manila we did together. And basically we're called in. We are friends of the lead characters. He's a cop. And we're part of his SWAT unit.
Yeah.
And he traps the bad guys in a jungle location. And we get on one of those little airboats. And actually the great fun thing is we went along the same spot they shot Apocalypse Now.
Oh, nice. Very cool.
So a little historic thing there. When you see us arriving on the raft, that's where they shot Apocalypse Now, right? The same location. And anyway, we get off the thing, and it's all action. Basically, we have a couple lines of dialogues like they went that way. You know. But Cynthia, myself, Olivia Gruner, and a very famous dramatic actor from Russia show up at the very end of the movie to help Casper Van Dien and Alexander Nevsky, who is the star of the movie, by the way. Alexander is a Russian actor.
Right.
And this is his little project, Showdown in Manila. They're already talking about the sequel. They've already asked me if I would be interested. And, of course, I would. I mean, I'd like to see the script before I sign on. But,
sure.
But I'm sure it's going to be a good movie. But they're already preparing for the sequel of that.
Well, we're all very happy because, I mean, we all love Mark Dacascos in Drive. Such a great movie, Drive. And, in fact, I think inspired The Matrix in a lot of ways. A lot of the moves and scenes in that. And just the look of the villains and things have a very kind of Matrix-y feel to them. But it's nice to see him. Obviously, he's been doing TV.
He's directing this one, you know.
Right. So he's been doing TV for a long time.
He's doing a great job.
Wonderful to see him.
As far as I saw, he was doing a great job.
And him and Matthias Hughes have gone on to do another movie together, I think. So I can't wait to see that.
Yeah, they went to Russia, and I believe shot that actually in Russia. It's one of the another Alexander Nevsky film.
Nice. Excellent. Well, like I say, any reason, any whatever the roads are that gets all you guys together or gets you back on the movie screen, we're all happy for it. And, you know, I'm pals with Owen, who runs the Action Elite. And, you know, they're big fans. There is it's not quite the geek culture, which is huge right now, but there is an underground or lesser proponent of the geek culture that absolutely loves these movies and these 80s and 90s action movies and you guys and you as stars. And we can't wait to see you come back.
Well, that's probably why our movies, it was you and people like you, John, that supported these films.
Yes, indeed.
That you would go to the video store once a week, just check out to see, because there was no advertising, right? You didn't see big banners or TV, radio ads.
No.
You would just go to the video store and look through, quote, the martial arts section.
Yeah.
You know, we had our own section of, you know, even Blockbuster had a martial arts section. And, so we became a regular staple in the genre. You know, there was a sci-fi section, there's a comedy, there's a family film. And, you know, a little tidbit. I was in the martial arts section of a video store once, and a guy's kind of crowded me. I'm trying to look for this new releases, and the guy's kind of crowded me, and it was Steve James.
Oh, wow, Steve James.
And I met him there. He recognized me. I recognized him. And we end up doing the very next movie together that I did. It was called Human Target.
Yeah, we talked about him last week with Demetrius as well because
such a great guy.
Loss.
You know what? I was sad. Yeah, he got cancer.
Yeah.
But a great guy. And
we met him
at the video store. We were fighting over the over the martial art movies. We were trying to crowd each other out.
Well, because he did obviously American Ninja, but he also did The Exterminator with James Dickenhouse and Robert Ginty and stuff. So, mm-hmm. I mean, yeah, he's in some of my favorites. I love Steve James. Such a sad loss. Well, look, just lastly then, anything about the Martial Arts Kid, any more that we can promote? What can people do? How can we support the film? Obviously, I'm going to the screenings you're doing in New York. I know that there are screenings in L.A.
Yes, here's the way they can stay on top of the Martial Arts Kid. They can, of course, Google it, but they can go to the Martial Arts Kid site. The Martial Arts Kid has a website and a Facebook page, and they can go there to hear all the latest news and where it's going to open. We are going to be having theatrical release for the film, and it will move. It'll be what they call a platform limited release in certain cities at certain times, but it will move across the nation. And they can eventually it'll be digitally download, probably on Amazon or one of them. You can just go and you can. I think the way they do it is you can watch it for 1 week for $3, and then you can own it for $7, something like that.
Right.
But I don't know the exact numbers, but I mean it will be available. It'll go through all the permutations of a domestic release and foreign sales as well. I believe they'll be selling it at the American Film Market this year.
Nice. And are you or James or anyone showing up for any of the premieres at all?
Well, of course, the L.A. ones will both be there. But on the New York one, I'm not sure yet. They have not told me that they – I will go to anyone that they have it in their budget to send me.
Right.
But I don't know what they're thinking. I don't know what their thought process is. I know there's some in Florida that I'm already committed to going to.
Nice.
But I'll let everybody know. I mean, of course, you know, everybody can check me out on Facebook. I'm on Facebook under just my name, Don Wilson.
Yeah.
And it's got a little headshot of me, so you know you got the right one, because there are a lot of Don the Dragon Wilson, you know, fan sites and some people that aren't – associated with me can just open up anything on Facebook. But
right.
I will first post when I'm going to appear, and I hope you. When is the New York one coming on? When is that?
The New York one is Friday, September 18th, and then Sunday, the September 20th.
Okay, I have not heard that they've committed me for that yet, so I do not know. But it's coming up soon, though, so I'm glad you're giving us some exposure on your show.
Yeah, bought my ticket for the first day, and fans who want to find out more can go to aftermoviediner.com and find a whole write-up, not only about the movie, who's in it, all the martial artists that are in it, but obviously where those screenings will be. There's also a trailer and images on there as well, so people can find that out if they want to on there.
Great. That's where they go then. The After Movie Diner, aftermovie.com.
Yeah.
They can find out information.
But that's fantastic. Wonderful to speak to you, Don. Thanks so much for giving us your time. Nice to know, with the Urban Action Showcase coming up in November, we've made it in under the year. We've managed to reconnect in under a year and talk. So I couldn't be happier about that. You're a big hero of mine. So thanks so much for your time and your generosity. So it's been a pleasure.
Oh, thank you. Okay, John. Thanks for talking.
All right, Don. Take care of yourself. Bye now. And you can also find out more over at martialartskidmovie.com. That's martialartskidmovie.com. Thanks ever so much for listening, and look out next week for another interview here on Booth Talk from the After Movie Diner.